2. Close work. They take back a little ground, just a little, and it's meaningless in the grand scheme of things, but it matters. To Fafnir Ran, it feels like a proactive achievement after hours of mindless resistance. When the enemy thrust chokes at the Delphine Viaduct, Arcamus, second of that name, orders in sustained bombardment from the high batteries. The firestorm, delivered by principal wall guns built to kill engines and void ships, cuts a molten canyon scar across the southern limits and catches the mass of the enemy fallback between Frattery Bastion and the ruins of the Hasgard Gate. The bombardment lasts 6 minutes, and Ran has no idea how many traitors die in it, but the number would be in the high thousands. A signal victory on another day. Today, high thousands are just a drop in the traitor ocean. The senior Huskarls call for entrenchment to take full advantage of the Delphine win, dig in along the viaduct line, and fortify that link in the stretched chain. Immense formations of Sons of Horus and World Eaters are driving in at the Loyalist line to the east and the west. In under an hour, the mauled traitor prong driven back behind Hasgard will be ready for a second bulk assault. But Ran has other ideas. If they can extend their line as far as Hasgard, they can form a salient from which to strike at the eastern and western traitor masses flankwise, rather than simply head-on. Arcamus concurs. The salient won't hold for long, but every minute brought back is another minute of the Emperor's life. The terrain beyond the viaduct is a smoking mire where nothing is identifiable anymore. Heat radiates from the mudbanks, the pulverized rockcrete, and the lagoons of slime steam. In minutes, Ran's advance is specked and pied with liquid mud. Namahi's riders, scouting ahead through the vapor with their Sovoraptors, return with Auspex surveys. Nothing lives between their position and Hasgard, but Sensoria read life traces in the surviving bunkers and blockhouses below Hasgard. The enemy has taken shelter there and dug in, hoping to hold a beachhead in preparation for their reinforcements.
Close work, says Zephon.
Ran nods. That's exactly what it will be. Every hand in the advance rises. Ran won't ask anyone to undertake a fight he wouldn't tackle himself. Fisk Halen volunteers, of course, but Halen is now bareheaded, his nose and mouth hidden by a rebreather, his ruined helm ditched. Ran gives him acting command of the advance instead, and asks for his bolt pistol. Halen hands it over without hesitation. Ran chooses Leod Baldwin and Val Tarkos. Zephon chooses Rinas Dol and Kistos Gielan. Namahi dismounts and calls two of his riders to follow him. Is this posturing? Ran wonders. The two field leaders, Blood Angels and White Scars, electing to go because Ran did. With the Mahi, it's a possibility, but not for the usual reasons of pride or rivalry. Ran knows the White Scars have always felt the outsiders in the Loyalist formation, deployed, contrary to their usual role, by necessity in the siege defence. From the start, they have been viewed as the junior partners, second to the Blood Angels and the Imperial Fists, a mobile force unsuited to defensive war work. The Keshig Master is simply seeking to underline that his brothers are willing and able to do whatever is required. As far as Ran is concerned, the White Scars have been proving that every day since the siege began. Their honour is beyond doubt, and their status alongside the Imperial Fists and the Blood Angels irrefutable. In Dominion Zephon, there seems no swagger either, though the Imperial Fists and Blood Angels have long enjoyed a contest of honour. Zephon, almost wordless, seems clinically matter-of-fact. He's going because, why wouldn't he? In that, Ran thinks, he simply conducts his leadership as I do. No fuss, no devolution of responsibility. Face it yourself, or dare not expect it of others. The Nine advance, through the mud lakes and swelter. The liquidized ground is already baking and cracking in the post-bombardment calefaction shock radiated by the area. The air swims with heat distortion. The complex of bunkers is half buried in the caking ooze. It will be close work, as Zephon said. Close confines, close quarters, clearing chamber by chamber. Baldwin and Tarkos have clamped their main weapons and drawn pistols and combat knives. The Blood Angels and White Scars have done likewise, drawing bolt pistols, and where the Blood Angels have poignards, the White Scars have edlel, or gutting blades. Large weapons or long blades will be cumbersome inside. Ran locks his twin axes across his backplate and takes out his own pistol and Halen's. Zephon, similarly, keeps his keen sword, Spiritum Sanguis, in its scabbard across his back. He has left his brace of precious Volkite pistols, powerful but impractical for the kind of combat ahead, in the care of one of his lieutenants in the advance, and borrowed a blunt-pattern bolt pistol. To Ran, the Exarch of the High Host, like all Blood Angels, seems a creature of splendour and rich panoply, so it reassures him to see Zephon favour plain functionality over ornate war gear. They turn off their active icon marker transmitters and fan out along the northern limit of the bunkers. Ran moves with Zephon, scaling a huge frozen wave of mud onto the top of a blockhouse. A shell has punched a hole in the roof, a circular wound through 3 feet of rockcrete, surrounded by snapped and twisted rebar. Since the fight at Clanium Square, Ran has noted a difference in Zephon. He doesn't know the Blood Angel well, by reputation mainly, but he knows him well enough. The Dominion was once known as a warrior of fury and passion, but now carries himself differently, moves differently. Even his voice, when he does speak, seems affectless. Ran hasn't marked it much until now, because there has been no room to think. But here, in the steaming silence, he's obliged to watch his kill partner closely for signals and gestures. The beauty and grace, so typical of the Ninth Legion, is still there, but Zephon now reminds him, he realizes, of some exacting natural predator, driven by a hardwired impulse to kill and feed, but entirely and scrupulously in control of that urge. The wild bravado has gone, and in its place is just the dense, lightless silence of menace. Ran wonders what might have affected such a change in the once noble warrior. But he need only look around. This war has done it to all of them, and to everything they know and value. It has hollowed them out, left their eyes empty and their expressions blank, and scraped the guilt of glory off all their deeds. Mere purpose remains, blackened and scorched, the duty to kill until killed. Valour, glory, pride, triumph, such Astartesian qualities are gone and bankrupt. It pains Ran to see Zephon so, to see a glorious angel clipped and dulled, all spirit vacated. Ran has always thought of the Blood Angels as the exemplars of martial prowess, not just great practitioners like the Imperial Fists, but paragons of inspiring prestige. It pains Ran, for in Zephon's grim emptiness, he sees his own, and sees the hollow soul of every loyal son left on Terra. He checks his melancholy thinking, for the work is upon them, and intense focus is required. Ran listens for sounds in the bunker below, and tracks for heat spots. He gestures to Zephon, then takes the lead, dropping feet first through the hole. Inside, it's a lightless oven of mangled debris. He advances slowly, silently, with both pistols raised. His visor penetrates the darkness for him, resolving a green ghost fog where the contours are shattered blocks and twisted metal, collapsed internal walls and the mashed pulp of those who were in the bunker when it was split and blown out from the inside. Zephon drops in behind him, and they spread out in parallel. Ran's visor passive tags Zephon with an icon, so Ran can track him and not target his movement in error. He reaches a hatchway into a connecting corridor. Torn struts and pipework jut from the ruptured rockcrete. Ran raises his pistols either side of his head, then swings through the doorway, a gun aimed in either direction. Empty. More layers of wreckage strewn underfoot, dust clogging the air like mist. Zephon glides past him, pistol up, dagger low. He pulls in against a bulkhead and covers the angle as Ran moves up past him. Room to the right. Vacant. Room to the left. Two corpses. World eaters, demolished by overpressure where they cowered. Ran covers Zephon. The Blood Angel moves left. Another chamber. He aims through the door as Ran switches past him. Tight angle. Nothing visible within. Ran nods, and Zephon rotates in. Three more bodies, destroyed by monumental shockwaves, compressed against the rear of the chamber like flotsam. Next, an adjoining chamber. A subcommunication duct. The cables of main system voxcasters drape like vines from the torn ceiling. A caster bank has fallen sideways, 3 tons of metal tilted against the wall with its broken mechanical guts spilled out. Ran enters first, pistols aimed. Zephon covers, then crosses behind him so they loop the slumped bulk caster. The World Eater, his left leg trapped, is hidden by it, but they know he's there. Their sensoria picked up his corrupted icon marker, his pulse, and the cycle of his plate systems from outside. He's been trying to gnaw his leg off to get free. When Ran swings around at him, he grunts and grabs for his bolter. Zephon's poignard has run through the back of his skull by then, the tip projecting between his teeth like a tongue. Black blood spatters the caking white dust. A half-open blast hatch, misshapen by air pressure. Ran goes first. The approach hall of a billet area. The hall was tiled, and half of the white tiles still cling to the walls. The rest are strewn and shattered on the deck. There is a little more light. Low-level auxiliary power feeds the caged overheads. They flicker, and the swirling dust makes the shadows undulate. Ran prowls in, covering a doorway with his left pistol and the hall ahead with his right. Zephon slips past him as he stands watch, then rolls around the doorway into a second chamber. Clear. Ran moves on. More tiled walls, some shedding tiles like fish scales. The doorway into a large barrack area. The insignia of the Haut Palatine has fallen off the wall. Most of the long line of metal lockers are still upright. In the bay end, dirty water pisses and fizzles from broken shower pipes. Ran gets a faint contact, but he can't lock it. Just motion. Not all of the enemy have functioning marker systems anymore, or they have shut them down. He signs to Zephon, who follows him in. Ran hugs the wall to the left of the locker bank. Zephon slips down towards the bay end to flank him. His sensoria paints a large alcove or archway beyond the lockers. They both freeze as they hear the rapid, muffled discharge of bolt pistols. The sounds echo through the ruined bunker complex. One of the other clearance teams has engaged. Ran longs to know who and to know status, but he won't go vox active in case the enemy pinpoints him. He takes another silent step. Something behind the locker bank opens fire with an autocannon.